on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, September 8th, 2025 edition, and we are quickly making our way towards the fourth quarter. Just a handful of weeks left in this quarter, and then we're in the final stretch. And usually the final stretch of the year is bullish, but September is also a month that usually brings some challenges. Now, so far, we've had a little bit of volatility, nothing to write home about. And the focus still remains on the Fed, inflation, the jobs market, the dollar. But broadly, that hasn't really impacted equities too dramatically. And really the credit cycle. And ultimately, that's what drives asset prices up and down in the, you know, short to medium term is, where are we in that credit cycle? Are things getting better, worse, or stable? And so far, at least right now, we are in a stable environment. So that's what the show is here to help give you some insights into where we are today, as well as where are we headed. And there are a lot of headlines. There's a lot of variables to consider. But our job is to weed through them all and give you the facts. Not the hyperbole, not the headlines, but the facts, as well as give you some perspective so you understand how to make better decisions with your money, given the data set that is in front of you. And we do this by bringing you topics, which we have plenty discussed today, as well as answering your finance and investment questions. So we encourage you to call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can leave your message and we will answer it on a future show. Or if you're listening live, 4 to 5 Pacific time every weekday, then you can give us a call and talk to us live. We love those calls. And if you are one of those callers, well, you get front of the line. You are given priority. So don't hesitate to pick up that phone. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics that we will hit on for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, this is Dan from Walnut Creek. I have a question regarding a stock. I'm not going to be able to try to pronounce the name, but the stock symbol is T as in Tom, G as in George, S as in Sam. I've been watching it, and today took a big dip. Right now, it's down by 17%. I'd like to get your thoughts on this stock. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Looking at TGS is the symbol. This is Transportadora Gas. It's an ADR, and it's out of Argentina, and this has had a recent drop. Let me see here. TG looks like, yeah, today was down 19%. I would imagine this is some sort of news around Argentina. I just want to know why it would drop this much. Obviously, when you're dealing with these emerging markets, there can be a million reasons why they fall 20% in one day, and that's part of the risk here. Always is, yeah, it looks like it's trending nicely, and suddenly there can be some sort of political unrest or problems that either will affect the country broadly or actually the company in particular. So I'm not sure what this is, but this recent break lower today certainly changes the technical backdrop. It wasn't an uptrend. Now it's in a clear downtrend from its highs really at the beginning, near the beginning of the year. So I wouldn't touch this. If I'm going to invest in Argentina, I want probably something that's more diversified because of this. Let me stick at ARGT because this will give you a sense of whether this is company specific or it was about Argentina as a whole. Yeah, Argentina, ARGT was down 10.5% today. So I'm imagining there's something to do with Argentina, some potential blow up there. I would just wait on it, especially because this is a new downtrend for this name as well as Argentina. Remember, this is the risk that you take when you're investing in the South American economies, and you have to be prepared for this level of volatility. So for now, I would stay on the sideline. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about why investors shouldn't ignore AI's broader impact. Outside of your hyperscalers and your NVIDIAs of the world, there's a lot broader, a lot more opportunities than that. Let's just say that. And whether you're talking about financial services, talking about innovations in other sectors, what are the long-term opportunities that investors should actively monitor? So we'll look at that. And in addition, we'll touch on a few other things. One is about a recent trend, and this was a pretty interesting discussion on Bloomberg today about Gen Zers chasing 90% yields and quitting their jobs. And this reminds me of my very early days in this business. And I'll talk about what that is and, you know, what the likely end result will be for these investors. And then we'll talk about when you invest in quote unquote cheap companies, why that can oftentimes be very, very expensive. So we'll look at that story as well. We also have voice bank questions. One is in regards to buying stocks for an 11-year-old. And we've been trying to get to that for a little while. And then Waterdrop Incorporated, WDH, as well. But most importantly will be your live calls, 888-99 chart. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We'll also hit on some Invest Talk YouTube questions. And then try to get through as many of those as possible. And we're going to go to a quick break right now, however, and please remember that you can call anytime. Leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. But up next, I will comment on today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Granger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART.
Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the True Age plus True Health test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The True Age plus True Health test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. True Age measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And let's take a quick look at the market as a whole. And it was another positive day, but in a very minor way, really. It was on the growth side of the market, certainly was outperforming on the day. The NASDAQ was up nearly 0.5%, S&P up about a little less than 0.25%, Dow was up 0.25% there. And there really wasn't a lot of economic news. You are going to get some economic data later in the week around inflation. I believe, if I remember correctly, it's on Wednesday. You have the Producer Price Index, PPI. I always say this is the outside of the PCE number. I think this has the most important weight in my mind, at least. Maybe not the market's weight. They look at CPI and things like that. But Producer Price Index usually feeds in. It's usually a 2 to 3 month lag into CPI, which CPI will come out Thursday. So market may pay attention to Thursday more, and you might see bigger headlines around Thursday's number. But to me, Wednesday's number is far more important. And obviously, you get more labor data on Thursday and consumer sentiment on Friday. So really, this is a week surrounding inflation. The expectation for the market or the Fed to cut by a quarter point remains. There's a hint that they could go bigger to 0.5%, especially if you get better than expected inflation data. But we certainly shall see. You also looked at other assets. Take a look at other assets. Treasuries were a bit stronger. You did see yields down for the fourth consecutive session, 8 basis points lower at the long end of the curve. So that's interesting of note. You're not really seeing a real breakout in yields. They're kind of range bound overall. And, you know, that's fine. There's two things I think that are going to end this cycle. One would be a strong breakdown in the currency that would stoke the flames of inflation in a bigger way. Right, we're already getting a reacceleration of inflation, but not in a way that you saw a couple of years ago when we were up into the high single digits. You know, it's starting to creep back above 3% versus, you know, the kind of 2.5% it's been in for a little while now. So, but if you get the dollar precipitously dropping, that could cause the Fed to tighten liquidity more aggressively. I don't think that's really the biggest risk, however, over the medium term. I actually think it's more rates breaking out. But right now, they're not. Rates are coming back down. And all that means, while the labor market is struggling and there are issues with the broader economy, it's not really translating into the credit cycle. And until that happens, until there's credit stress of some kind, you still kind of have to be generally bullish risk assets, especially as you get closer to the end of the year. As you get into the fourth quarter, if you have a positive year, which we do right now, what are we up somewhere in the high single digits on the S&P for the year, that tends to mean you get a reflexive rally into year end, and then things could change in the new year. So that's kind of where we're at in the kind of the medium term picture. The dollar was off 0.3% on the day. Gold finished up 0.7%. Bitcoin was up 0.5%. WTI was up 0.6%. So you can continue to see an inflationary, reflationary environment. And so you can't get too bearish on risk assets as a whole. So that was the market today. Very interesting. And we'll continue to update you each and every day here on Invest Talk. Now, every day we receive questions from the comments section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And here's one that just came in earlier. Rock Don says, quick question on what do you think of MKC, McCormick Holdings, international producer of spices, and one of the largest holdings, not doing much for a while, also continue to hold UPS. Do you have a preference on one over the other? Okay, let's take a look at MKC. And this is one of those names that has a great business, consistent business, good margins, good balance sheet. And you know, there's not a lot of people trying to get into the spice business and out innovate a McCormick in the spice world. They're kind of the strongest player. But like any company, it can get a bit expensive and business can maybe get a bit over, I don't say overhyped, but you know, it can over-earn in the short term. You know, there's long-term margins and profitability, and sometimes companies can over-earn for idiosyncratic reasons, and suddenly those come back in, and now their earnings growth kind of tempers. And that's what you've seen as of late. They've earned $2.95 last year. So they're earning $3.04 this year, so 3% growth, and $3.30 next year. So solid business, 2.5% dividend yield. Solid profitability, 14% return on equity, modest debt, no issues there. I think the issue is that it was trading at an expensive price, currently 18 times enterprise value to EBITDA. That's more reasonable, kind of the low end of the 10-year range. So while it's been underperforming, I think it's a fine hold. It's low growth though, so it probably shouldn't trade at a high multiple. I don't think you're going to see this drop into the low 50s or anything like that, but it doesn't get me excited in the short term. So if I'm owning one over the medium to long term, over McCormick or UPS, I actually would rather own UPS. Thanks for the call. They're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here, taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And our main focus point is about AI's impact, not just on the tech sector, but more broadly. Now, AI is still a powerful catalyst for economic growth, technological advancement, but it's so much more than what is, I think, widely discussed right now. So much focus is on the Mag 7 and the hyperscalers and the companies in development of this technology. But if you step back and you look at the advancement of technology throughout the years, you'll see that there are a couple of simple facts. Number one is that the costs eventually decline. The cost to deliver that technology. So I immediately go right now and say, okay, how expensive is it to deliver on AI, to get compute power in order for AI to actually work? And what I see is hundreds of billions of dollars. I'll get to the numbers in a little bit, but so much money. And a lot of that is going to the NVIDIAs of the world. And the big question is, will that continue? Are these chip companies that are feeding the AI beast, does that align with the history of chip manufacturers and the margins that they typically demand? And I think the simple answer is no. And then I say, okay, the price will eventually come down. What does that mean for adoption? And historically, that means widespread adoption. And I think in many ways, you're getting that now, because most of these AI companies are being subsidized by either cheap capital and hype around the industry or other businesses. Think of the hyperscalers and the amount of money that they're putting into AI. Well, that is from cash flow from legacy businesses like Microsoft, like Google. You know, think of their traditional businesses, advertising. On the Google side, you have you have Microsoft 365 and all those tools that are really paying for the development of AI. But over the long term, AI has to stand on its own two feet, and the costs need to justify the spend. And then, you know, it's about the next phase. What will AI agents lead to? What kind of customer experience will that create? What type of enterprise productivity will it create? And that's where I see the most opportunity that's underappreciated, underdeveloped. This is going to be part of what we talk about during our webinar later this month on the 30th. And it's called Beyond the Mag 7. And that's what we are going to really hit on, is what other verticals where AI can be applied, will it bring more effective and efficient goods and services? And for the most part, it's going to be services. That is 3/4 of our economy. But once again, there are applications here where it's going to expand margins to a level that in certain industries has never been seen before. So I encourage everyone to, A, sign up for that webinar. It's free. Head over to our website, but also just expand your thinking beyond just these major names, especially because the big four hyperscalers, Amazon, Microsoft, Alphabet, and Meta, this year expected to spend $596 billion combined, up 35% from last year, on their AI growth. That is an obscene amount of money that surely is not justified by the current revenue, the marginal revenue stream that is being created with AI. Now, eventually it might get there, but what is a stable state of CapEx that will make the AI business economical? I can guarantee you it's not $600 billion a year between four companies. So what you have to think about is that the ultimate winners within the AI space, A, are underappreciated in today's market, or B, they're not even around yet, right? It could be startups that are yet to be created, or companies that just haven't fully embraced AI and its full capabilities within their organization. So make sure you understand that this is an opportunity set that is much broader, that touches almost every sector in the economy, and will continue to evolve as these AI agents evolve as well. Now, as we go to a break, I'll ask you to tell your friends and family members about our free InvestTalk downloads. They're available anytime at iTunes or Spotify. And you can also watch the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. So make sure you head over there and subscribe. But please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. We're heading into a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-SHARP.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name's Elliot. I had a question about a company called Waterdrop. They had earnings this week. I think their ticker's WDH. So their earnings were up about 50% year over year. What interested me about the company is it said it is a medical insurance company that makes its way using AI. So I thought it was an AI play. And I just wondered why the stock doesn't move at all. But it is a penny stock at about $1.80 a share. Anyway, that's all I had. Thank you.
All right, looking at Waterdrop Incorporated, WDH is the symbol, and this is a Chinese company. So right there, you have to say, okay, are these numbers real? And what's interesting is that before, they used to describe themselves as a company that had a third-party insurance company that had a positive social impact. Now they're calling it a company that uses AI. Well, you know, we use AI. Does that mean we're an AI company at KPP Financial? You know, we leverage AI for research and coding and things like that. But does that make us an AI company? No, I think every company, especially white collar companies are going to utilize AI, and insurance company utilizing it. Sure. Does that mean you buy it? No. I mean, the technicals are fine. It's in an uptrend. That's good. But this is, as you said, it's a penny stock, $1.90, $723 million market cap. Their earnings were up big, but earnings this year are only supposed to be a penny. It's a $1.90 stock. Next year, it's supposed to make 2 pennies. Not a whole lot. So to me, this is just all hype. It, as a trade, sure, but this is not an investment. It's not an investment. It's a company that's historically all over the board when it comes to profitability. It's way down from its IPO price in 2021 when it was trading at around $10. It looks like it might have been, this is probably a SPAC, if I'm being honest with you. And now it's at $1.90, so from $10 to $1.90. So I wouldn't touch this. It just sounds like a whole lot of hype. And that reminds me of one of my favorite stories over the past year is this recent one. I don't know. I'm a big NBA fan. I've had legacy tickets for a long time. And it's the Kawhi Leonard story around paying him under the table through this company called Aspire. And immediately, a company called Aspire is a big red flag for me. And so same thing here. A company that says, oh, we're having a positive social impact. What does that really mean? And clearly, Steve Ballmer has tried to get around the salary cap rules, and there's going to be some big ramifications there. But very interesting story if you're a sports business head like I am. I think always that's interesting. But it's just another good example. And that, by the way, that company Aspire was trying to plant trees, and it went bankrupt, and had this social mission. And I always say, if you see a company that their sole ethos is this social mission, it's not a company, it's a charity. So you might as well go invest in a charity. Now, companies can have a side purpose, but not their main purpose, okay? That's social, because they're just not going to be able to compete when that's their sole focus is the social impact. And guess what? It's not going to create profits for you or shareholders. So understand that as well. There's some lessons to be taken from this water drop, as well as what happened with Aspire. And I wanted to bring that up because I do think it's useful for everyone to have that frame of mind when you're looking at these companies and you see a lot of hype around social impact. Now, while I have your attention, let me tell you about the new series that is debuting on our InvestTalk YouTube channel. It's called InvestTalk Innovators, and Luke and I will be bringing you insightful interviews with company leaders, founders, and visionaries. First episode is up. Luke spoke with Perrin Bakta, and he's the mind behind Inside Ownership, and it's really about unlocking the potential of founder-led businesses. So head over there and watch the full interview. Visit our InvestTalk YouTube channel today and stay tuned for more conversations. And once again, our next one is going to be a real banger. So keep an eye out for that. Now let's keep things going and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
One of my nephews, he's turning 11 years old. So I was thinking about buying him a few shares in a company. Now, I was thinking about the best stocks to buy for kids. I looked it up. There are some suggestions like Disney, Target, Mattel, Hasbro. Some of them are not doing very well right now, so I don't want to buy him a stock that's not doing well, right? And there's Nike, Adidas, which he is into sports. I was thinking about buying him a stock that I own that he might be interested in, or maybe just VTI, the total stock index. If you had any suggestions on what you would do for a 10-year-old, super long-term hold, would you just buy a certain sector? Would you buy an ETF? Or how do you feel about any of those companies that I just mentioned? Do they stand out? Let me know your thoughts. Thank you very much. Bye.
This is a great question. And it all depends on what your goal here is. Now, are you trying to get him interested in investing and earning money in the markets? Well, then buying a broad sector ETF or a broad market ETF, probably not going to get him very excited. He's not going to know what the S&P 500 is or what that means, but we will know what a lot of these brands are, whether that's Nike or Disney or maybe Sony if you play PlayStation, or does he play Roblox, or, you know, now you really have to filter and see what brands he comes across, that he uses, that he likes. And I would just try to find the company with the best long-term profitability track record and reasonable valuation within his realm, within his worldview. And don't think just because you read an article that that's really going to appeal to him. Every kid is different and has different interests. You know, some are into sports, some are not. Some are into video games, some are not. Some might not like Nike. Some may love Nike, just depending on, you know, who they are. So you really have to look at that with your, I think you said it was your nephew, talk to his parents and try to get a sense of who that kid is. And I think that will give you a set of companies to look at, and then do your own research and explain probably why you picked that name. And hopefully over time, you can help build out a portfolio of companies he cares about, and will get him more engaged. There are some great tools out there. There's some great apps, parenting apps for I use Greenlight. That's not something, I'm not giving a sponsorship or anything. It's just something I use with me and my family. You can invest in equities, savings accounts, charitable donations, chores. It's a really great tool. So I would go with something like that and make it easy for them to use and understand as well, on top of buying individual companies. I think that will give you the most engagement from that child. Now let's pivot over and talk a bit about a recent Bloomberg story on Bloomberg TV. And it was very interesting. And the title was Gen Z Chases 90% Yield to Quit Work. And this reminds me of my very early days in the business. This is the late 90s, before the dot-com bubble 1.0. And there were a lot of very young individuals in college, fresh out of college, that were, even in high school, that were trading equities. And they thought this was their ticket to not work. And then the bubble burst. And guess what? They had to go find jobs. And we're starting to get into the latter part of this phase where the decision-making is getting really, really out there. And there's a new SPAC today called 8Co. It's another one of these crypto treasury companies. It's up 900% today. SPACs are back in vogue, similar to 2021. And we saw what happened kind of right after that. And the echoes of 1999 are kind of everywhere for me. Especially these crypto treasury companies, the MicroStrategies of the world. And there's a lot of them that are turning into this. And it reminds me of, if you go back to the 20s, there were trust companies, and that was part of the blow up in 1929. And I'm not saying we're gonna have a 1929 type of situation. What I'm saying is these treasury companies are employing a lot of leverage. They're borrowing preferred equity. They're leveraging up their balance sheet to gain access to this asset. And at the end of the day, this leverage will come back to bite all of them. There will be a margin call, and there's nothing substantial about these assets, right? It's crypto. There's nothing backing it. Okay. It is turned into an asset of pure speculation. And history always says that when that happens and liquidity broadly turns, which it always does, and the credit cycle turns, which it always does, suddenly, what happens here, there's something called broad money and base money. And this is a term that everyone should understand. Broad money is what's lent out there into the system. Okay. And this is kind of what happened during 08. Banks stopped lending. Broad money was called in. and there was a potential collapse into what was called base money, where all of the debt outstanding basically is vaporized. Until powers that be step in, they liquefy the lending industry, and suddenly broad money starts to expand again. And in a fractional reserve banking system, that's what has to happen. And when you create this leverage within the crypto space, and there's nothing hard behind it like there is in the traditional, the TradFi industry, there will be a major collapse within the crypto space. It's just a matter of kind of when, not if. And the more and more of these crypto treasury companies that are out there, the more the risks rise. And I think it's very interesting that as more and more of these companies are doing this, it's not really pushing up the price like it should, at least in the short term. So that relative underperformance is a bit telling to me as well. So what you see here is that each bubble throughout the years kind of gets bigger and bigger and even more insane. And you know, it's all about number go up more than anything, and more than understanding what the true value of the asset, underlying asset is. And this is a time that's we've never seen before. I've never seen before in my career. It kind of pales in comparison to what I saw in 1999, to be frank. And even into the housing bubble. I remember going to, I know I wasn't obviously directly involved in housing at that point, but indirectly through markets as well as, you know, the social circles that I was in here in Southern California, especially, there's a lot of speculation around that. And I'm seeing even more, even broader speculation around crypto and these very, 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 very aggressive strategies. And I think it's really driven by a level of nihilism within the youth that to me is understandable considering our political situation. But it doesn't change the fact that the risks that are being taken are outsized and misunderstood by 99% of those that are actually taking that risk. So I wanted to highlight that because it's very important to understand where we are in context to history. Let's go take a live call. Nick from Hayward looking at Lyft, listening on AM 1220 in the Bay Area.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Justin. Great show. I appreciate it very much. Wonderful show. Yeah. Can you tell me this might be okay time to buy some Lyft or wait for it to come down? Or I want to take your suggestion from you, please.
Yeah. Looking at Lyft, L-Y-F-T, obviously the little brother to Uber, but it's trending pretty nice. The relative strength is at 87. Okay, if you go look at Uber, it's actually at 84. So it's performing a little bit better over the last year. But from a valuation perspective, earnings on Uber are supposed to be 350 next year, about 35 times forward looking earnings. I got actually Lyft would be cheaper. Yeah, $1.34 next year. So you're about 15 times forward looking earnings. That's not bad. And I do find Lyft tends to be a bit cheaper, to be honest with you, if I'm getting rides. It kind of depends on what you're trying to do. Earnings trends are headed higher. I like that. The technicals are improving. And I do think the credit cycle remains intact for probably the next roughly year or so. And so I would say I give it a thumbs up because of the valuation, because of the trends in the stock, and the fact that the credit cycle remains solid. However, is this a long-term hold? No, I do think that that next recession, which I think we're slowly sliding into, you know, we're not there quite yet, but obviously with the labor market weakening, that can be, that's going to be an issue over the, call it 12 to 24 month timeframe. But I think near term as a trade, I'm okay with it because of the recent trends and the reasonable valuation. Thanks for the call. I think we're going to head to our final break, but we do have a live call after this break from Chris in Maine. So Chris, hang on. We will be with you. But if you have a call ready for me as well, don't hesitate to reach out at 888-99-CHART.
The numbers are in. InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. And there's a simple reason. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go speak with, where are we? I know we have a lifeguard, Chris. There we go. Chris from Maine looking at Barrick. The owner looking to buy it.
Yeah, hey, Justin. So actually, I've owned it for quite some time. Done really well with it recently. Okay. Problem is, I've been doing some covered calls on it, and last week lost all my shares. It's been on such a tear, which isn't a bad thing to make a bunch of money, but now I don't have any anymore. So I was calling to see, with such a jump up in price, do you foresee a pullback? Should I wait a little bit, or do you think I should just take what I can get on any?
Yeah, I mean, the industry as a whole is a bit overbought, but I think it's in an uptrend for a very, very good reason. And I think pullbacks should be bought, as they should have been bought for the last many years that I've been speaking about increasing your allocation to gold. And this is obviously at a 52-week high, the highest level since 2020. And the first question is, why'd you let it get called away from you?
That's a good question, because I set it at such a, it was at like 21 something when I made the call option. I put it at 26. Mm-hmm. And I made pennies on it because it was such a gap. So I didn't foresee losing the shares. But I guess, I've only been doing call options for a little while. So my mistake, lesson learned.
Let me guess. It went X dividend on you and that got called away, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a good lesson for everyone out there doing cover calls, is that you have to watch the X dividend date, because if it's in the money and there's not a lot of time value left on the option, which I'm assuming it was like a September expiration, then the owner of that option, that call option, will call it away from you so that they collect that dividend. Remember, you don't collect the dividend unless you actually own the stock. And so they execute the call option, buy it the day before it goes X, and then they get the dividend. And so that's something that we manage when we run into our cover call strategy. We have to look at what are the X dividend dates for each company, because every company we own in that strategy does pay some sort of a dividend. And anything that's in the money, we have to make sure we roll it out and up usually before that X dividend date happens. So there's enough time value left where it's not going to get called away. So it's one of those idiosyncrasies that most investors that are running cover calls are not paying attention to. But obviously, us as professionals, we kind of do this all the time, and we don't want to see them get called away unless we really have to, right? So just also make that a lesson to you, is follow those X dividend dates and make sure you don't get called away unnecessarily. But I do think the industry is a bit overbought in the short term. For Barrick, I would probably try to be picking it back up around the 25, 26 level. I think that's where a reasonable pullback would make sense, and I would continue to buy it at those levels.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And it was definitely a lesson learned on this one. So I appreciate you guys.
There you go, Chris. And hopefully that lesson is learned by the rest of our InvestTalk audience as well. Now, can we fit in one more caller question?
I was wondering how you set your target price to sell. Let's say you buy something at the bottom of a 5-year PE range. Do you extrapolate that out to the top of its 5-year PE range to sell, or do you pick something in the middle? Looking forward to hearing the answer on the show.
Well, there are a lot of different ways to set a price target. We use a combination of multiples, as well as our expectation for earnings going forward, as well as that range. And it's not just PE range. We're rarely using PE range. We're using some other metric, something like an enterprise value to EBITDA. Maybe it's a price to sales, price to book, things like that. We're looking at much deeper numbers than just the PE. That can be very misleading. So I wouldn't look at that. And we use discounted cash flow models as well. So there's different ways to set it. We also use technical analysis, right? Is there a certain resistance level that is make it difficult for that to get through in the medium term as well? So these are all factors to consider, and you should be using a lot of different ones to come up with your price target. Now, I'm Justin Klein. And if today's show made you think about your financial picture in any way, your investments, your retirement path, your Social Security strategy, your Roth conversion strategy, any of this, whether you want to keep a property that you no longer be a landlord for, things like that. These are things that we work with our clients on, help them understand the opportunity cost, the risk versus reward, the risk, etc. And that's what these no-cost portfolio reviews are all about. Help bring clarity to your situation. Now, we thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, and check out our YouTube channel as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.